Chapter 7 Axes and Elephants. According to the book of Genesis, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. He completed that task in 6 days. Then he formed a man, a living being. God placed the first human in the Garden of Eden. 4 rivers flowed from Eden, 2 of them being the Euphrates and the Tigris in Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers. So, how old is humanity? How long has the earth been in existence? 2 centuries ago, Christian teaching considered the creation story in the Old Testament to be an actual historical event, calculated from the scriptures to have occurred in 4004 BC. To suggest otherwise was to challenge Christian belief, a serious offense. But there was a major problem with this. Could all human history have unfolded in a mere 6,000 years? The question of human origins had surfaced in scholars' minds as early as the 16th century. Antiquarians throughout Europe puzzled over the collections of stone tools discovered in plowed fields. Many called them natural objects formed by thunderbolts. Then John Freer came along and everything changed. John Freer, 1740 to 1807, was an English country landowner and a graduate of Cambridge University, where he had studied mathematics with some success. He became the High Sheriff of Suffolk and a Member of Parliament from 1799 to 1802. But his major interests in later life were geology, the study of rocks and the earth, and archaeology. His political and social connections were excellent, and he was elected a fellow or member of the Royal Society and of the Society of Antiquaries of London, both major learned societies of the day. By all accounts, he was a charming man, blessed with a deep curiosity about the countryside around his home at Royden Hall in Norfolk, eastern England. In 1797, some brickworkers uncovered stone axes and the bones of large animals in a clay mining pit at Hoxton, a small village some 8 kilometers from Freer's home. He rode over and dug carefully into the walls of the brick pit, recovering more axes and the bones of long-extinct elephants, now, of course, tropical animals, sealed between sterile layers. Freer realized that this was something extraordinary. He did what most antiquarians did at the time. He wrote a short letter to the Society of Antiquaries of London, knowing that most people interested in the past were members. As was the custom on June 22, 1797, his brief report was read aloud to the membership and was published 3 years later. A trivial event, one might think, but what Freer wrote was truly memorable. He described his finds as weapons of war, fabricated and used by a people who had not the use of metals. So far, there was nothing particularly astonishing, as many of his fellow members believed that the ancient Britons had no metal. But what he wrote next was really remarkable. The situation in which these weapons were found may tempt us to refer them to a very remote period indeed, even beyond that of the present world. Freer's words were fundamentally at odds with religious teachings and must have struck the Society of Antiquaries like a thunderclap. The members were cautious, respectable folk, and numbered among them many priests. And so they quietly published Freer's letter and set it aside. John Freer's discovery was ignored for 60 years. Even before the Hoxton finds, there had been a few discoveries of elephant bones alongside stone tools fashioned by humans in Europe. This was surprising, for there were no elephants there in the 19th century. As more elephant remains and stone tools came to light, it gradually became obvious that humans had lived in Europe long before anyone had used metals and had dwelt alongside long-extinct animals. Apparently, they had even hunted them. Did they do this before the biblical creation of 6,000 years ago? Those 6 millennia of human existence were becoming more crowded. For instance, how could one explain the mysterious stone circles of Avebury and Stonehenge? These were already ancient when the Roman general Julius Caesar invaded Britain just over 2,000 years ago. People started pondering a hitherto unthinkable question. Had the world existed before divine creation? Christian teaching considered such a thought both irresponsible and criminal. We tend to think of archaeology as just the study of ancient human societies, but such a narrow viewpoint is wrong. You can't rely on archaeological excavations and artifacts alone to reconstruct the past. Archaeology developed alongside other disciplines, such as biology and geology. And they all came together when scientists started to confront such tough issues as human beginnings. There was no way of understanding our origins without studying both fossil animals and the geology of the Earth. To show that humans had flourished long before 4004 BC required proof that they had lived alongside the long-extinct animals found in the layered rocks of the Earth. Geology and religion came into sharp conflict. Christian teachings of the day proclaimed that God had created Earth's geological layers in a series of divine acts. There were several creations, separated by catastrophes. Some of these events led to the extinction of animals, the last of them being Noah's flood. As far as the Bible was concerned, humans and extinct animals had nothing to do with one another. Yet with increasing frequency, archaeology was turning up evidence of their coexistence in obviously very ancient geological levels. John Freire unearthed his stone axes and elephant bones at Hoxton during a time of major change across Britain. Cities were booming, canals and other large-scale construction activities exposed many feet of geological layers in all kinds of places. While the Society of Antiquaries forgot Freire's work, a humble canal expert named William Smith, 1769 to 1839, revolutionized geology with his field observations while designing the routes of waterways across the countryside. Smith mapped rock formations over long distances, and he identified long sequences of them, clearly formed over lengthy periods of time. His enthusiasm for geological formations was infectious, and he soon became known as Strata Smith, strata being the geological term for layers or levels. This remarkable geologist was also a keen fossil collector. His vast experience of geological layers helped him realize that many layers of the Earth contained distinctive fossils, and that changes in fossils represented changes in time. This was an entirely different way of looking at the world. There were no snapshots of sudden catastrophes or dramatic divine acts. It became increasingly hard to assume that God had all of a sudden created these complex strata. Surely they had been formed by such natural processes as rainfall, flooding, blowing sand, or earthquakes. A new scientific doctrine emerged, that of uniformitarianism. In other words, the same slow-moving geological factors that had formed the Earth in the past were still in operation. The Earth, as we know it, had developed from a continuous process of constant change that extended far back into a remote past. A celebrated British geologist, Sir Charles Lyell, 1797 to 1875, took over where Smith left off. He studied geological sequences all over Europe and wrote one of the classics of 19th century science. His Principles of Geology was an attempt to explain changes in the Earth that resulted from natural processes that were still in progress. This, of course, made it possible to argue that humans had originated over a far longer span of time than 6,000 years. But the Church was still all-powerful, and Lyell was careful not to discuss the thorny issue of human origins in his book. Like so many great scientific advances, Lyell's brilliant study influenced field researchers in other disciplines. Among them was the young biologist Charles Darwin, who read Principles of Geology while on a 5-year scientific voyage around the world on HMS Beagle in 1831-36. Darwin observed geological layers in South America that had clearly been formed over long periods of time. He also recovered fossils and observed modern animal species, especially birds, that had changed gradually over time. These observations were to lead him to his revolutionary theory of evolution and natural selection. Interest in extinct animals intensified, especially when their bones emerged from buried layers in caves. Cave excavations became a fashionable way of finding long-extinct animals. In Belgium and France, stone tools started showing up in the same cave layers as the bones of extinct animals. In Britain, a Catholic priest, Father John McEnery, 1797-1841, excavated Kent's Cavern, a large cave near Torquay in southwestern England, in 1825 and 1826. There he found stone artifacts and extinct rhinoceros bones sealed in the same level under a layer of stalagmite, a limestone deposit formed on cave floors by drips from the ceiling. McEnery may have been a priest, but he became convinced that people and, now extinct animals, had lived alongside one another longer ago than 6,000 years. Prominent churchmen disagreed, and some even claimed that later people had dug pits into the older levels and left their tools alongside fossil animal bones. Nevertheless, thanks to the Kent's Cavern finds, the leaders of the scientific establishment started to take notice of the human artifacts and extinct animals that were now routinely being found together. They were particularly interested in the discoveries of Jacques Boucher de Perthes, 1788-1868, a minor customs official at Abbeville in northern France's Somme Valley. Boucher de Perthes visited the gravel pits around the town almost daily. He unearthed finely made stone axes in the same levels as the bones of extinct elephants and other bygone beasts. He became obsessed with his tools and said they were the work of people who had lived before the biblical flood. Unfortunately, Boucher de Perthes was given to delivering long, dull lectures about his finds, and in 1841 he wrote a book, De la Création, a 5-volume discourse on human origins that caused scientists to label him a crank. By 1847, when he published the first volume of another long-winded essay, Boucher de Perthes was convinced that his some axes were very ancient indeed. His persistence paid off. A few French experts visited the pits and concluded that he was right. Their influential opinions reached both Paris and London. Had Boucher de Perthes not been such a bore, his discoveries might have been recognized for what they were much sooner. In 1846, the Torquay Natural History Society set up a committee to explore Kent's Cavern anew. They employed a schoolmaster and talented geologist, William Pingelly, to lead new excavations. His discoveries confirmed Father McInerney's conclusions. Another cave came to light during quarrying above the town of Brixham, across the bay from Torquay, in 1858. A distinguished committee of the Royal Society observed Pingelly's investigations there. Beneath a thick layer of stalagmite on the cave floor, he unearthed numerous bones from extinct animals. These included cave lions, mammoths, a long-haired, cold-loving elephant, ancient forms of rhinoceros and reindeer, alongside human-made stone tools. The association between human tools and extinct animals was now beyond doubt. In 1859, just before Charles Darwin published On the Origin of Species, 2 leading members of the scientific establishment paid a brief visit to the Somme sites. Geologist Joseph Prestwich and antiquarian John Evans, the leading expert on stone tools. Evans himself dug a stone axe from the same level as a bone from an extinct elephant. The 2 scientists returned to London convinced that humans had lived on Earth long before the biblical creation. They published their findings in papers that were read to the Royal Society and the Society of Antiquaries of London, where John Freyre's brief letter about Hoxton had been presented 6 decades earlier. Times had finally changed, and the scientific evidence was beyond dispute. There was no longer any doubt that humans had a very long history indeed. The Brixham and some finds raised serious questions about human ancestry. Obviously, humans had first appeared far earlier than 6,000 years ago. But how much earlier? Charles Darwin's famous theory of evolution and the discovery of an exotic-looking human skull in Germany would set the stage for the study of an open-ended human past.